Hello, welcome to East to West Weight Loss Surgery, where we support the bariatric community with humor, humility, and honesty. I'm April, and I'm the West.
And I'm Jason, and I'm the East.
We are thrilled to be welcoming back our favorite human on the planet, Wendy Rawlings. Hi, Wendy.
Hello, it's nice to be back with you. Thank you.
We have been talking with Wendy frequently, really kind of since we started the podcast. I met Wendy when I first started my bariatric journey. I was seeing an addiction therapist. He recommended that I seek out a therapist who specializes in bariatric surgery. And Wendy and I really clicked and connected right away. And she is the main reason that I have found success after bariatric surgery. And when I told Wendy that I had started East to West WLS with one of my friends, because we had found that after surgery, we were missing the support that we needed. You were our first and most like vocal activist for providing this support and then kind of teaming up with us and being a frequent guest on the podcast. So we just cannot thank you enough for giving more of your time to support this community.
I love every second. Yeah. People.
So Wendy, before we kind of dive into the podcast episode, will you tell people who are new to watching or listening us just who you are as a professional and maybe share a little bit of your own bariatric story?
Sure. I'm a licensed mental health counselor. I practice in Washington State, and right now I practice online a lot. I had bariatric surgery in 2005 and lost 205 pounds. And have kept all but 10 pounds of that off. And that's what my body wanted, was that extra 10 pounds, and it feels good. I don't really think about it much anymore. In my own context, it's become such a habit, a new way. It was a new way back in 2005, but it's the old way now. Most of my clients are bariatric patients. I love the community. I resonate. It's the kind of person I am. And I love just mentoring other folks who are in their own journey.
And I think what's really so powerful about the help and guidance and support that you offer is that, you know, you've been through it. You know what this is like. So not only can you speak to this from a clinical, you know, psychological perspective, but you also have that added layer of, I've been through this, I've lived through this, or I still struggle with this because I have undergone bariatric surgery. And I think that combination is just so rare and it's so hard to find. Like I said, I mean, when I found you, it was like, oh, this is a gold mine. I mean, this is what I needed to make it through. And now the fact that you are seeing people nationally, I think is just mind blowing to me in the best possible way, because you're able to meet people's needs all over the nation.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. That's one of the only good things from the pandemic, right? Yeah.
Yes. Yep. Wonderful. Well, Jason and I are very excited, like I said, to dive in with you today. And I will just let our listeners know that if learning by listening through a podcast is not your favorite modality of learning, we also record this in Zoom. So you can pop over to YouTube and search East_WLS, and our glorious YouTube channel will come up. And you can see us. We're very animated. We're adorable humans. We have faces for radio and TV. So you can watch us there. And I think sometimes too, when you see people and how they even interact over Zoom, you just get a better sense of the type of people that they are. And I think sometimes you almost get more out of a conversation, even if, you know, you're listening and watching is like a double threat, right? Listening is fantastic, but when you combine it with the power of video, I think sometimes more things stick. So I just wanted to let people know that that was also a resource available to them. Okay. Yeah. So we asked the community, or we told the community, hey, we have the opportunity to interview a bariatric therapist. If you could talk to her, what questions would you ask? And we got flooded with questions, and they were wide ranging. Some were very broad, some were very focused. So Jason and I just kind of reviewed the list of questions that came in and kind of summarized them into four bigger questions. So today we're calling this episode Rapid Fire, because I know, and we all know, that these are huge topics and they can't be covered in an hour long segment. But our goal for today is that we briefly touch on each one of these questions, let people know that their thinking or their struggles or their question is valid, and offer a starting point. And then the goal is that as time goes on, we would love to really deep dive into these topics to have a more holistic approach to it. And I know, Jason, you and I, and with Wendy's help, we have covered some of these topics in earlier episodes, but I think this is gonna be nice. We'll have very succinct questions, a very succinct response, and we'll just give people a place to start. right? We're not saying this is all. We're saying this is where the work begins.
Right. And that's one of the things that you and I have really come to kind of appreciate about these questions that come rolling in that we can kind of go back over and look at, because we're not, you know, a lot of the questions are questions that we've all had and we've all run across, and they're kind of, you know, along the similar normal line that we follow. But there's been some that have been real heavy hitters that are some stuff that a lot of us didn't even really think about from the different aspect of the way the questions are coming. So yes, we're definitely excited to get some of this information out for you, and at least if nothing else, the resources to find better or deeper answers to what you're looking for.
Yes, that is the goal. Okay, so today's questions. Are you ready, Wendy?
I'm ready, yeah.
Thank you. Is food addiction real? That was a very common question. And then again, tied to food addiction, is abstinence the only solution? We had a couple of people tell us that like their doctor, their nutritionist had just said like, you need to abstain from certain types of food or this food group. So there was a lot of questions around that. The third question is, how do we battle regain? And then if we do regain, how do we fight the depression that kind of goes along with regain, right? So really a lot of the questions had depression and regain in the same sentence. So yeah, a big one there. And then the final question for today, how do we overcome body dysmorphia?
Okay. They are fantastic questions. So let's crunch them one by one. The first two and the second two are the first two and the third and fourth are kind of related. So
yeah,
maybe I'll address, address the first two together a little bit. So is addiction real? The research is showing that it is. No one thought to research it until more recently, but with the obesity rates, especially in the United States, just soaring, yeah, it has become a big topic for research. And a review of the literature shows that, yes, it's pointing to, yes, it is a real thing. It's not your imagination. It's not the donuts that call to you at 2 a.m. It is a real thing. Part of it is the fact that it triggers the same dopamine pathways that alcohol, drugs, et cetera, trigger any kind of pleasurable activity. So the answer is yes, it looks like it is. There's some discussion over whether it's a disease, like alcoholism is a disease, okay, or whether it's a behavioral issue. And a review of the literature is pointing to the fact that the best fit criteria is that it's not a behavioral addiction, but it's actually, okay, closer to a substance use addiction. Which would indicate that it's more physiological.
Okay. So, and that is kind of my question, right? Is it, I guess I don't understand the difference. I mean, I think I do on the surface, but between a behavioral issue or problem and then a disease issue or problem. So what distinguishes the two?
So the disease model would be the addiction model would be the build up tolerance and then dependence, and then you have to have it or you're actually addicted, which is more of a physiological thing. There's a behavioral component to it. You can't really separate the two completely, but that it more becomes physiological. And the addiction they usually study is sugar, because that's when it's easily available. It's available in a variety of forms, and it looks like our bodies are building up that tolerance to it, and then a dependence for it, and then some people go to the place where they just can't live without it, or they don't think they can.
And that's so interesting. I know in our conversations, and I think even Wendy, you might even have a story that you can share about this, is that Jason and I often experienced our behavior shifting when we got hungry, right? We would call it, we were hangry, and we would do things and say things and act out in a way that was not really who we were, but we were doing it because we felt deprived of food, or, right, we thought that something was coming. We thought that a meal was coming or a food experience was coming, and it didn't. And then we just became awful humans because of food.
Yeah, exactly.
So that speaks to that dependence.
Yeah, it really does. And our food and mood, I mean, everybody knows that you're going to have a different mood from eating chocolate cake versus eating Brussels sprouts. And it will both be fine, but they're going to do different things to you. Partly too is that we are biologically created to have blood sugar up and down. The blood sugar is supposed to alert us to being hungry. It's also supposed to help us when we get stressed, et cetera, et cetera. So blood sugars move up and down based on what we're eating, how often we eat, when we just ate. So there is that physiological part of it as well. But think about the first time you ate something that you just had an incredible response. It was way better than you expected it to be. And by the time you ate it, the 10th time, you were just shoving food into your mouth, seeking that pleasurable response. So that causes us to eat more, just trying to find that response. Yeah.
I always tell people that if I'm thinking about ending it all and I'm about to jump, if somebody brought me a Cadbury egg, I would probably back away from the ledge. And I mean, and it's, you know, it's funny, but it's almost truthful because those are my absolute, that is it for me. Yeah. And this spring, I really noticed for the first time that was not as pleasurable as I remember it. And I almost got a little bit of anxiety. You know, I was like, oh my God, this isn't what I remembered. And why, what's wrong? And I really had to take a moment and just go, maybe it's because like you have changed or your taste buds have changed or, you know, everything is different now. And this just isn't doing it, you know, for me. And my brain instantly went to, oh, that's part of your addiction. Like you were really like gearing up. You were looking forward to that, like whatever you thought was coming. And then when I bit into that egg, it was like, this is not what I thought it would be. I mean, it was weird, but it was powerful.
Right. Well, and a lot of people get concerned about the fact that they think that, well, now that they've had the surgery, this shouldn't be a problem. That's going to fix all that. And they're just going to be good. And that those things won't happen anymore because I've had the surgery. So I should just be able to just go out there and do whatever I want to do. I'm going to be able to eat better now because I'm going to make better choices because I had the surgery. That's so far from the truth.
It'd be nice if it could change our brain that way and our dopamine centers, wouldn't it? Yes. That's a whole different process. Yeah.
Well, I remember one of the first times that you and I met, Wendy, you said some things that made me very angry. And I swore a lot. I swear a lot in real life. And I swear a lot at Wendy because she says things that it makes me mad. And I let her know that. And she continues to still see me. She's the same. But she had said something along the lines of like, well, you know, the surgery isn't going to fix your head. The surgery is just going to limit your capacity to eat. And I was like, what do you mean to stop fixing my head? Like, this has nothing to do with my head. This has everything to do with my stomach and being hungry. And she was just, you know, we're going to talk, you're going to be seeing me for a long time. And I was just like, God, no, you got to be kidding me, you know, so mad. But it's so true, right? Surgery does not fix what is driving us into obesity. It doesn't fix obesity. It just doesn't.
Yeah, it doesn't. It limits it for a little while and it gives us time to learn skills. And hopefully before you have the surgery, you're already working on those skills.
Yes.
So bottom line, addiction looks like it's real, feels like it's real. I remember the first time I realized I was addicted to sugar and I just had to sit and go, I couldn't believe it. And then when I just to reinforce it for myself, I don't think, obviously it wasn't an addiction. It was a very strong dependence because I got off of it without any problem, except for a 3-day headache and a bunch of grouchy people that lived in my house that couldn't stand me. And I couldn't stand them either. But once I got off and it was so unpleasant for me to do that. It's not that I'm abstinent from sugar, but I just don't go into the big amounts that I used to go into because I just don't want to go through that again. It really was aversive stimulus and it worked for me.
So that ties really beautifully into the next question, right? Is abstinence the only solution for people who are addicted to food or addicted to certain types of food? Is that the only solution then for people looking to overcome that dependence?
Of course not. Of course not. And I will tell you, full disclosure, I am completely abstinent with I call it my gateway food. Before I had surgery, I knew that if I had ice cream, my willpower would be gone. It would be like the alcoholic going into the bar and promising not to drink. And then, you know, after 10 Diet Cokes, they started drinking. So I knew for me, that was my way to stay grounded and it was my measuring stick of how I was doing. So, but it was my gateway food, meaning gateway food is a food that you're doing fine, and you eat this one thing and it's the gateway back into the addictive behavior, into the dependence or whatever, however far you're into that. So mine was ice cream. I just said no more ice cream. So I had a great ice cream party. It was my last one. I still remember. I still love the memory. Nothing can even come close to that. But so for me, I was abstinent on that one food. And it was to keep me strong. It was to keep me in line with myself. I don't recommend abstinence as a general rule. It triggers too many emotional responses. Now, if you're ready to be abstinent, or if I did have one client that just, man, if she did chips, she would do whatever else the grocery store offered. That was her gateway food. And so I recommended that she become abstinent with chips for a period of time, just mm-hmm. to see, just as a science experiment, just to see what it did for her. And she came back in and I mean, she was grouchy at me. If you think you were grouchy at me, April, now you're awesome. She was unhappy, and she wanted to fire me, and I gave her, I mean, not that she needs permission to fire me, but she wanted to so bad. And she said, I really just never want to see you again, but I know that you're the best thing and you're the only thing that's holding me on. And I said, okay, well, we're in the same place. we're both there. So she just kept doing it. She just kept abstaining. And I said, just abstain one more week or just one more day, and don't ever take it off the table, but just say for today, we're not going to do it. And she did. And she was so brave. She was so brave. It just brings me to tears when I think of her courage. And she did. And she passed the 3-month mark, and something changed. And she got to 4 months, and she said, I feel so much stronger around chips. And she said, and I'm not even buying them, you know, when I go down that aisle. And then she said, now I don't go down the aisle anymore. So gradually she just, I think, I don't know how long she's been abstinent, but she chose abstinence with that because she said, I feel so much better not even putting that on as a possibility because of the way it wrecked me when I did. So you can be abstinent. You don't have to be abstinent, but and especially if you don't like to be told what to do, you know, if you don't want to power struggle with somebody else, you power struggle with yourself enough. Or if you, you know, if entitlement or deprivation is an issue, never put abstinence on the table until you've tried everything else.
Well, and that's one of the things I think in the last episode when we were all together, I believe, you know, we were talking about it. I'm like, And that may work, like you said, that will work for some people, but some people it's just not, you can't, because then that throws them way off the deep end when they finally do break, because not only do they want what they wanted originally, now they want that and then whatever else they can get, because, you know, that same thing, they want to feel that power that they have control over their own life, and that they'll show, you know, I'll show you, like, yeah, to the detriment of yourself, you will show us. Yeah. By going out and doing those things and overstepping those boundaries and lines. But, like, you know, the most important part of that is to remember, at your own detriment, you will do those things.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I really liked what you said, Wendy, about how, you know, abstinence can be on the table after you have tried everything else. That is really powerful. I after conversations with you recently, I was finding I love Cheetos as well. Cadbury eggs and Cheetos. Those are my two things of kryptonite. And when I was going into the grocery store, there's those end caps right at the grocery aisle, and they have the little bags of Cheetos. And I would purchase a little bag of Cheetos and I'd say, this is fine. It's a little bag. It's no big deal. Well, I was doing that every time I went to the grocery store, and it was really becoming not good for me. And so when COVID really hit, you know, I just said, okay, I'm going to order all my groceries online, and then they're going to deliver them to my car, and I'm never going in the grocery store. And it was phenomenal. It worked beautifully. I brought healthy food into my home. My weight was dropping again. Things were good. Well, we had our family come and visit us for the weekend, and I thought my little nephew was coming, who also loves Cheetos. My father-in-law loves Cheetos. So I said, okay, I'm going to buy a special treat, and I'm going to buy all of us one big bag of Cheetos, and we will enjoy that. Well, then my nephew ended up not coming. And I just thought, you know, I'm not even going to offer those this weekend as a snack. And I stuck them in the back of my pantry, and I knew that they were there, but I really kind of heard your voice about saying, like, you know, just, okay, not today, but tomorrow, right? You can enjoy those tomorrow. And I did that for the whole weekend and never brought them out. And then I forgot about them. I just absolutely forgot about them. And Grady was rifling through the pantry looking for something. He's like, hey, we got a bag of Cheetos. And I just thought, oh, I totally forgot about that, you know, that bag of Cheetos. And I just remember telling him, like, you know, I don't think I'm in the mood for Cheetos, even though that was not true at all. I just willed myself to speak those words. I was like, I'm going to eat the whole bag, but I'm going to tell him I'm not in the mood for it. And I had suggested, I don't know, something else, right? And he's like, oh, okay, yeah, that's great. So, you know, we ended up not eating them. And that tool, or that real simple statement of just not today, but tomorrow, is helpful. And we did get to the point where we opened the bag of Cheetos and we ate them over a couple of days. They were absolutely delicious. And then I was done with them. I was over them. And I just knowing that I've got these tools to that I can go to that get me through those tough times, because I don't want to abstain from Cheetos. I really like Cheetos, but I want to be able to interact with them in a healthy way, in a way that supports my recovery and supports, you know, a healthy life.
Yeah. And when you talk about control, those Cheetos no longer have control.
No.
And you have control. So control is a big thing for us. And we like to be in control of a lot of things. And so that the food really does control us if we're not on top of it.
Yep.
Right. Well, and one of the most important things I think we need to kind of preface all that we're talking about today is we're not trying to tell you that you will ever just be better, be over it, be whatever it is with your, you know, your relationship with food's never just going to just go away one day. What we're here to do in speaking with these and having these episodes is we're giving you the tools you need to be able to cope with those times when it comes that you're facing those, you know, those options or those urges or those choices you want to make. You can go to your toolbox and say, hey, you know, this is what I'm feeling. I've got the perfect tool for that. Let me grab this. I'll be able to rationalize what I'm talking about and work my way through it. So this is never just a one question answer cure all, and you're just going to feel better and go, oh, well then maybe I don't need to have that cupcake or whatever it is you're thinking about or struggling with. These tools are simply something for you to look through and go, okay, well now that I'm feeling like this, I can reach for this. It's no different than when you're, you know, taking something apart and you need a certain wrench to do it with. You're going to have that wrench in your toolbox based on the information that we're giving you or providing you, you know, links to when we're done with this episode. So
I like that analogy. That's a really good, really appropriate analogy. You know, one more tool I think that's important for me, I like information and I like research. And they found that our taste buds desensitize really quickly. So that first bite is going to be the best bite. It's blissful. And the second bite, there's a little bit of power to that. By the third bite, you're really just kind of shoving food in your mouth. So just remember that. So if you've got to have something, just if you can keep it to that first bite and just really be mindful of it, take plenty of time to notice it, smell it, look at it, and then eat it and just taste it and taste it and taste it. It's really, that's where you're going to get what you needed from that thing, whatever that is, that Cheeto, is that first bite. So yep. That's really important. Yeah.
Very true. Being mindful, right? I know we keep coming back to that word, and it's not the scary word that we think it is. It literally just means you pay attention to the sensations that you're feeling while you're eating. That's all that means. And then as soon as you realize this isn't as good as what I thought it was, or now I'm just eating it because it's rote, it's memory, you can be done with that.
Yeah. Exactly. There's not going to be a good enough reason to compel you to eat.
No.
Whatever it is, even money. I had a client and she was either high dependent or addicted to food, and she loved fast food. So she would choose what she would order off the menu for fast food, write down the amount, transfer it over into a savings account. And that was her way to, you know, to reward herself for not eating. And she had a really nice vacation in 6 months.
I bet she did. That's so smart.
Wow. Yeah, that's brilliant. Wow. It was brilliant because she would have spent the money anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So she just transferred it into a savings account for that purpose.
Wow. Yeah. That's what an awesome tool. Wow.
That's legit. If I did that, I could buy all kinds of stuff. Because boy, I was a fat dude. I'm not playing. That was it for me, boy. Fast food, sneaking away to get fast food. I've talked about that in plenty of episodes. I was hiding doing that stuff from my whole family. Didn't nobody know. Like I remember playing back the episode where I talked to when April and I were talking, when I was talking about going and eating those 4 and 5 triple cheeseburgers and the large fries and stuff in the car. My wife looked at me like I was talking about stepping out with another woman. She looked at me like I had just violated everything. And I'm like, sorry. Like, but she's an addiction. Like, she's a substance abuse counselor, so she knows everything. But to hear it, I think to hear it coming from my mouth was astonishing to her, because she had no idea. Like, she knew I ate like an asshole sometimes, but she had no idea the level that I was going to be able to do that, not only in front of her, but also behind her. And that was so shocking to her. It was just, it was crazy.
Well, but I mean, that's what addicts do.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you get to, I think early on in your addiction, or in the middle of your addiction, you're doing everything you can do to keep it from people, right? Because you're ashamed of it. And, you know, I think, you know, when you're really deep into your addiction, it just is who you are. And then it just doesn't matter. Like, well, I'm a drunk, or I'm a drug addict, or I'm super morbidly obese because I eat 5 burgers through a drive-through when nobody else thinks that I'm doing something. So
in my car, yeah.
Right. So that's a really good indication that you have a problem.
Yeah. That is true. That is true.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the difference between tolerance is where you don't get the same, like the Cadbury egg example, you don't get the same reward from it emotionally as you did. Dependence is where you really need it to function, or you need it to have a good day, you need it to be in a good mood, you need it to deal with the stress in your life or the people in your life. And
that's exactly where I was.
Yeah, that's where most of us are, actually, is people. I always say we're eating not only for ourselves, we're eating for everybody else that we're trying to help. And that's really, whether it's a reward or whether we're just trying to be stronger, or we've got all kinds of reasons we do it, but our population tends to be really big helpers. Mm-hmm. We eat for everyone.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So our first two questions, it sounds like we've got some really solid answers. Is food addiction real? Yes. The evidence is pointing to it is an addiction that is similar to drugs and alcohol. And then, is abstinence the only solution? The quick answer was it can be your last option after you have tried everything else, but it's not, Wendy, it's not what you recommend. So.
I don't, as the first one, I mean, I chose it because I knew myself well enough to know that I'd already burned out the other options. Yes, so yeah.
Exactly. The other ones didn't work. So that's where I have to go.
No. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. So our next two questions are kind of related to more of the physical changes that we go through. So a member of our community asked, how do we battle regain? And then kind of a second question to that is, then how do we overcome or battle the depression that we experience after a regain?
So I love the wording on that question, because it just shows you that we see that we're battling. And when we talk about regain, what are we talking about? We're talking about our bodies. Mm-hmm. And so we're having a battle with our bodies. And so the overall solution to this is to make friends with your body. It's to really realize that it has served you well. It's tried to be faithful to you. It's your primary relationship. It's literally the relationship you have 24/7 for the rest of your life. And so making that a good relationship, the relationship between your mind and your body, one that is comfortable, one that is that where your body can talk to your mind and your mind can answer your body and talk to your body, where you're collaborative and you're not battling each other. If we regain weight, our bodies are regaining, but it's not their fault usually. It's usually a decision the mind's made. And then we can get mad at our body, and we're in that battle again that we were in before we had weight loss surgery. So go ahead, April. You had a question.
Well, yeah, it just kind of hit me all of a sudden. It was like, oh my God, in the past and even now, yeah, if I've regained, I blame my body. I'm just deflecting the real reason that I have regained in the first place. So it has nothing to do with my body. It has everything to do with the choices that I made.
Bingo.
But so I've just been deflecting it the whole time. It's like, well, this isn't my fault. This is my body's fault. Exactly. But my body's only doing the things that I'm telling it to do, or it's only using the resources that I'm putting into it.
Right. Exactly.
That's Wendy and I were talking while you were going to get your water. I was telling her, I was like, I had a 3-pound gain from yesterday, but it's because I know that I crammed 3 pieces of pumpkin pie in my face. It took me 5 hours to do it, but I still did it. And I knew what was going to happen when I got up this morning, because trust me, I took 3 deep breaths before I stepped on the scale, because I was like, all right, man, this is it. Like, whatever happens, this is your bad. Like, you're going to have to own it. And I did. I stepped up, and that shit was 3 pounds heavier, because yesterday I'd hit my lowest weight total, so I had hit the 160 pounds lost, and I was super pumped about it, but I was like, tomorrow pie is happening. I knew it was coming, and yeah. So...
You packed in a pound per slice.
And that's exactly what I was saying. That's exactly... I was like, I don't think... And now, today, when I was thinking about it, I thought back on it, I was like, I mean, I really don't think I deserve a pound per slice. That's some bullshit. But other than that, you know I did it, but I kind of got cheated. But whatever. It was that first slice was a sliver. Now, the others were slices, but the first one was a sliver. And it was still a pound just like the rest of them. But that, you know, I got cheated, but I'll take it.
I love how you're trying to, like, rationalize it, even though you know it's total, like, bullshit.
100%. That's not, but that shows you that even though I'm going through all of this and we are where we are in our recovery, I'm still going to rationalize it, because, you know, I'm not, where it doesn't fix anything. It doesn't make us better.
No.
So what I had said to you in response to that was, I imagine you had a plan for that. Mm-hmm. And what'd you say?
I did indeed. I knew exactly what was going to happen, and I didn't think I was going to go, you know, 3 in, but it was still there, and I was still there. So, you know, nobody else was showing it any love. So why shouldn't I?
Yeah. So today you did a meal substitute, and you're on top of it. Yeah.
I did. Instead of doing eggs this morning, like I would normally do for my mid-morning snack, I did a meal replacement shake, and then I had a very light, heavy, protein-packed, very light lunch, and I'll be doing the same thing for dinner. So, I mean, I'll be looking to hopefully get those 3 pounds back. So,
yeah. So that is a really good example of what you do when you have regained. You know, you have a plan. If you can just do this thing deliberately, we use the word mindfully a lot, and I like that word, but I like the word deliberate. I'm deliberately gonna take a day off of my eating plan because it's Thanksgiving, and I have two ways that I think of it. I think of an unplanned eating event, which isn't a good thing, that's going off plan, and then a planned eating event, and they're both events. And you did a planned eating event, and now you're working on the regain, and you're not up in arms, and you're not hating on yourself. You're just going, okay, well, I got a plan. And that's really how we do it. It's just a matter of fact thing.
Well, and I've seen this a lot, you know, in bariatric communities on Facebook, and I even experience it in my own life, right? Where one meal leads me to, well, I've blown the whole day. So then the whole day is I'm eating garbage food. And then I wake up the next day and I feel so horrible about the decisions that I made. Well, now my whole weekend shot. Oh, well, now the whole week is gone. Well, now the whole month is gone. And before you know it, you have regained a substantial amount of weight, 10, 20, 30 pounds. And I see people on these groups talking about, like, I'm so depressed, I've regained this weight. And my question always to them is, well, what are you doing to regain it? Or what are you doing to stop this cycle of regain? And I think that's where the depression piece comes into it. And when I see these two together, I instantly go to, well, that's the shame cycle, right? You've made a decision that you're not happy about. You have realized that there's some consequences, and then you just feel even more horrible about the situation. And instead of doing something new, which is making different decisions like what Jason did, you just continue to make these decisions that make you feel better for a little bit, but actually just contribute to your continued downhill spiral into blackness, which I think we've all experienced.
Yeah. It's the habit cycle, you know. Yes. You get the trigger, you do the thing, and you have the response. So it works up cycle, and it works down cycle. So, but here's the other thing. And that's true. The depression can be caused by shame or by guilt, you know, beating ourselves up the next day or even in that day. And what I would say in those moments to remember is there's no such thing as failure, only feedback. And so if we stop looking at, oh gosh, I failed, I got to start again next Monday or next year, or I'm never going to get past this. It's all feedback. Let's take it. Let's use it. What went wrong? What will I do next time? And then get straight back on the horse. Don't wait for tomorrow. Don't wait for the next meal. Get straight back on. And And that's the key to feeling better when you, you know, when you get off the horse, when you go off your plan. But there's also the idea that we had depression before we had weight loss surgery, mm-hmm. and we were using food to mask that or to cope with it. And the reason that we had depression doesn't change, just weight loss surgery doesn't change that either. And so it's really important to understand where the depression is coming from. Is it because I went off my plan and I feel guilty and ashamed? Or is it because I have some issues that I'm not resolving? Or is it genetic and do I need to, you know, to get some meds for it? So it's really important to understand what that's about.
And dude, I'm having like deja vu here because you and I, Wendy, have had this conversation multiple times. And I think we've even had this very similar conversation on a previous podcast episode. But when you asked me that question, when I had said like, God, I'm just feeling really down. I'm bummed. I feel depressed and that's not normally me. You know, why is this? And you had asked me like, well, you know, did you feel this way before surgery? And it was like, well, yeah, I think at times, and you know, yeah, I think so. And you had just very, you know, clearly pointed out to me like, well, you're probably depressed before surgery and surgery isn't going to fix those feelings. If you were depressed before surgery, you can and will be depressed after surgery. And I was like, oh my God, like nobody had ever said that to me. So I think it's really important that people know surgery is not going to fix those feelings. The only way to fix them is to really get to the cause of what's causing you to feel so bad about this situation. And through conversations between you and I, you know, I was able to identify some areas in my life that I just wasn't happy in. And then, you know, just to even get those feelings out was a relief. And then I could start working on the issue, right? And by dealing with that issue, that desire to fill the sadness with food goes away because, well, I'm addressing the reason and now I don't need this mechanism anymore. I don't need food to numb or to help me feel better because I'm actually taking the steps to resolve those issues. Exactly. Super powerful.
Yeah. Food is just the symptom.
Yeah.
And underneath is what's really going on. So exactly. Yeah. So no failure, just feedback. And if you were pre-depression, pre-surgery, then it's not going to go away.
I like to kind of look at it like, you know, depression can be a symptom of weight gain, but weight gain cannot be a symptom of depression. Like you weren't just depressed because you were overweight. So the surgery, like you said, the surgery is not going to make it better. And the shame cycle situation, I've gotten to a point where, you know, I kind of took a page out of your book, Wendy, for yesterday. And, you know, for my planned eating event, I chose to really focus on the time I had spending with family and doing all those things and not let anything that I had done or was planning to eat or any of that factor into it. And I wasn't getting down on myself and I didn't consider it, you know, I didn't let the shame cycle creep in. You know, I've started really looking at more of as a bump, not a jump. Like instead of it being, well, you know, if you hit it, you know, if you're on the wagon and you hit a bump, you can recover from that bump. But if you jump from the wagon, a wagon's going to keep going and you're going to be tumbling off to the side. You can't recover from that. It's going to take a lot longer to recover from jumping off the wagon than it is just hitting a bump in said wagon. So I've been coming more to terms with bumps, not jumps lately, and it's been helping me quite a bit.
That's bad. Yeah, again, a really good analogy. I like that a lot.
Making that into a graphic.
Oh, I know. I had all kinds of things going because I'm visual and it's like, oh. Uh-huh. And for mine was ironically a hay wagon. Don't ask me why, but that's what it was.
There you go. Hey, whatever works.
That's right.
And Jason, I know that you and I are both making really great progress just as friends and as colleagues, because this morning, so we have an East to West chat group with people who are very close with us or who are a part of, you know, East to West, like from a crew member standpoint. And I mean, the chat yesterday was everybody was so thankful for everybody, you know, lots of expressions of thankfulness and, you know, pictures of what we were doing and, you know, things that we were enjoying and some food and, you know, whatever. I mean, it was very, you know, it was celebratory, which is it should be. And today, the very first thing that came across was, good morning, you know, my East to West peeps. I hit a bump yesterday. I'm back on the wagon. And Jason said, like, I am doing all liquids today. right? I mean, he was just like, I stepped on the scale, 3 pound gain. Oh my God, here's my plan. And all of our response was awesome. We too hit a bump. And then everybody was like, well, here's what I'm doing. Here's what I'm doing. Like I'm tracking, I'm doing, we made these Berry Boss trackers. They're awesome. It's the 8 things that we need to do every day to be a boss of our bariatric recovery. So I was like, whoop, pulled up that tracker on my phone. Here's what I'm doing today to get back on plan. And it doesn't take away from the joy that we experienced yesterday with our family, or, you know, the feelings of euphoria, you know, or the enjoyment that we did get out of eating certain things. It was great. It was a great day, but now we've moved on and we can live in this moment of joy. We can still be feeling euphoric about it. And we can also be focusing on our recovery at the same time. They're not two exclusive things. They can live in the same brain space. So yeah. You know, that's how I know that you and I are on the right track, because we can do those moments and then we can instantly switch to, nope, I'm back on it. This is what I'm focusing on. It's a really powerful place to be in your life.
Yeah, I definitely felt, I did feel a sense of power over what I normally know would have happened. And that to me shows, like you said, that we've come really far. And you know, I'm coming up on 9 months out, April. I know you're well over a year and a half out. So it, you know, for people who are early on, don't sit there and think that, you know, you're not going to be, you know, well, I could never do that. Yeah, you can. You'll get to a point where you can. The more you go in your, you know, the farther along you go in your journey, the more tools you're going to build, the more, you know, the more full your toolbox will get. You'll be able to do the same things that we're doing. You just have to take it one day at a time and you'll get there eventually. You know, and if you're already there, that's fantastic, because the earlier you can get to a space where you can do these types of things and have those healthy behaviors, the easier this is going to be for you.
Yes. Yep. And I think the number one thing that I would recommend, well, when people come to me and they say, I'm struggling with regain, my very first question is, well, how much protein are you getting in? How much water are you getting in? And what's your carb situation? And if they tell me, well, I don't know, then my only response is, then you need to start tracking.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only way. If you don't have the data, then you're just pulling things out of thin air and you're using that as an excuse to continue to do the bad behaviors. You know that you're doing them. You just don't want to confront them. Well, if you really want to get successful at regain,
we go into denial about that. So we remember the good stuff we did, forget the bad stuff. There's five things I always ask my clients when they're either at a plateau or they're starting regain. And one is, are you getting enough sleep? Are you getting your water? Are you getting your nutrition, your supplements, and you get enough protein? And are you tracking? And those are the ones. And everybody, I've never had a client that's done all of those and done them faithfully that has had a regain problem at all. And it usually takes them off of a plateau. Sometimes they'll need to move more. Mm-hmm. And you'll notice exercise isn't even in there. That can be a sixth one, but that kind of puts you over the top. Yeah.
Yes. Excellent. Okay. Very powerful. So we've got some tools for how we battle regain, and we've kind of got some tools for dealing with the depression that comes with that. Right. And I would, my personal life, if I really start tracking those things, then the depression that I'm feeling around my regain tends to go away, because I'm taking actionable steps to drop that regain. So then that just tends to kind of slough off.
Well, and if you just remember, there's no failure, it's just feedback. So the steps you're taking is implementation of the feedback.
Yeah.
And if you can say, I didn't really fail, I didn't follow my plan, or I didn't jump off the wagon, I bumped off the wagon. And that was the feedback that I needed to get back on the wagon and figure out what I'm gonna do that I don't bump off next time.
Well, I think sleep was one of the biggest things that you talked about that a lot of people never even talk about. It always goes to protein, water, and those types of things. But sleep, people don't realize, you know, the reset your body will go through if you get the proper amount of sleep. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I know for myself, I've adjusted, because I used to be like a five and a half to 6 hours sleep a night, and I'm on it the next day. Like I can function, I can hit all the high notes I need to hit, and I'm really pinging off of that. But I've noticed that adjusting that to like 7.5 to 8 hours of sleep a night, not only does my body pull more water off of itself from being laid down that long and resting for that long, I've seen my 1 to 1.5 pounds of weight loss per day go up to as high as 3 to 3.5 pounds per day when I get the more amount of sleep and pull more water off of myself than I do when I'm trying to sleep 5.5 to 6 hours a night. And now I'm getting to a point where if I don't get that, you know, 7.5 to 8 hours, I'm a lot less on it than I used to be.
Yeah. Sleep. If we don't get enough sleep, our bodies produce cortisol, which causes weight gain or weight retention. Mm-hmm. And there's just a whole, and our bodies aren't as healthy. The last sleep cycle we go through is what repairs the body. There's just on and on and on. We wake up with more willpower. I detest that word, by the way, but we wake up better able to have the resources to get through the day.
Yeah. Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, Wendy, but when we sleep, when we rest, that's where the brain solidifies what we've learned for the day, right? So it's, I always imagine that, like, you know, throughout the day, I'm just throwing papers in a pile, you know, in my brain. And when I sleep, my brain is actually doing the work of filing and categorizing all of the things that I've taken in. And when my body rests, it's where kind of my muscles and my bones and the cells are doing that same work. So if you're not getting adequate rest, you are never giving your body time to actually use what you have put into it that day.
Correct. And it does the brain stuff first. It does that for the first at least 2 sleep cycles. And then it'll focus on the body.
Mm.
So it's really important that those get all of that gets in. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. Well, our very last question, how do we overcome body dysmorphia?
Oh, this is a great one. This is whoever asked that question. You're living
everybody,
in bed, aren't you?
Everybody asked that question. That too.
Yeah, I think honestly, and so let me just do a definition first. We've got body dysmorphic disorder, which most of us do not have. That is where we are thinking really a lot about our body, and we're focusing on something. We usually focus on 1 or 2 things that we get a little OCD about. It might be a scar, it might be, you know, our weight, our belly, the way we're, you know, whatever it is. But we're spending a lot of time in a day focusing on that, worrying about it, worrying about how we're perceived, not liking ourselves. And it gets in the way of our social functioning, our ability to get out and do things. And most of us aren't to that level of a disorder. But that said, we have some body image issues that we put in the overall category of dysmorphia, which is just we're not pleased or happy with how we look. And sometimes it stops us, not a lot or not all the time, but it does stop us. So that's what most of us have, is this lack of body awareness. So it served us 2 ways. And before we had weight loss surgery, we didn't really realize the size of our bodies. I remember looking at a picture at my parents' cabin holding a little child. And I looked at that picture and I said, who is that? And my sister said, well, that's you. And I thought, well, I recognize the outfit, but holy cow, that's not me. That's big. That's really big. And this was a grandniece of mine. And she fit on a little spot on my shoulder. And I hadn't realized, because I had body dysmorphia the other way. I didn't realize how big I was. And so as we drop weight, it goes the same way. We don't realize how small we get. And that's super common. For 5 years after, I would go shopping and I started with the 3Xs, and I was wearing a medium to large. That I'd always start there. And my daughter would just get, she, when she was with me, she'd say, Mom, why do we do this? Why do we do this? And it was the dysmorphia. And now 15 years later, I'm pretty much aware, and I still kind of tend to lean toward the larger, look at the larger clothes first, but it's something that we just have to work ourselves through. Because of our history, we are almost always going to have a lack of awareness of our real size. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes perfect sense, because I was the exact same way. I didn't, when I was at my heaviest, I had no idea I looked the way, like I knew I was big. But when I see pictures of myself that big, I actually get upset at the people around me, because I'm like, how the hell did you let me go out looking like that? I look like a polar bear in a t-shirt. Like, what the hell? Like, how do you just let me walk around looking like that? Yeah. And they're just like, we didn't even realize you looked like that until now you look like this. And I'm like, well, I mean, I guess it works for other people too. Like, they see the you that they love. They don't see, you know, they see that, you know, you're, how you look to them, their vision of you is not what you truly look like. Right. And I just, you know, to me in my head, I still think I'm big enough to fit some of my old clothes until I put them on and it looks like a parachute with a neck hole. And I'm sitting there looking like an idiot trying to wear this shirt out. And my wife's like, what are you doing? I'm like, what are you talking about? And she's like, you can't wear that. And I'm like, why not? And she's like, because you look like our son put one of your old shirts on. And I'm like, oh. And then I go look at the mirror and I'm like, oh, okay, I see. Never mind. I was just playing. Then I go get changed into something that actually fits. But yeah, it's,
yeah,
I don't know. It's crazy.
Well, and it's hard to rectify, right? Because you lived your life for so long and you thought you looked a certain way, and you come to realize that you never actually realized your size, right? You never thought about the impact that your size had on your life or your lives of others. And then when you start to look so different, so drastically, right? So immediately, everybody's trying to do this. Everybody's trying to wrap their head around what they are seeing happening, you know, before their very eyes. And while people look at you and see the change, not only are we also seeing it, but we're feeling it, right? We sit down somewhere, we sit in a chair, and all of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, wow, this is different. Or I notice still, I will go to, you know, scoot around somebody in a store or in a situation, and I'm like, you know, back and way up. And then you realize, oh, I got 5 feet between me and this person I was thinking I was going to scooch by. Yeah, no, right? So not only is your brain trying to rectify what it's seeing, but it's trying to rectify your actual size and shape now. And that takes some time to adjust to.
It does. And it's sort of like space has altered. That grocery store analogy is a good one, because mm-hmm. it's like our space has altered. So it's really important, first of all, to give yourself time. And some of this just never goes away, and that's okay if it doesn't. The most important thing is to know what you look like. Look in the mirror. And again, we'll alter what we're seeing in a mirror. Take pictures and look at the pictures. Take pictures next to things that are like the same people or the same tree or the same, although trees grow and then we look smaller. But take pictures that you can regularly look at. And most of us do during the weight loss process anyway. But take pictures just to help you maintain this is who I am, not who that person in my mind is, because I'm still at size in my mind, but I know that, you know, I wear certain size clothes and I have a certain amount of space around me.
So somebody had recommended to me that I should keep my largest top and my largest pant. And I got that piece of advice after I had already really cleaned out my closet. So I have a pair of pants that are not my largest, but they're not, you know, my smallest. And it is amazing to put those on and just, you know, I mean, I'm to the point now where they don't stay up at all, right? There's nothing there for them to grab onto. And it helps me realize, wow, this change is real and this change is lasting. And, you know, when I go to purchase clothes, I really need to purchase clothes that look like this. So, I mean, I've even got to the point where, you know, I have to hold up my new pants or my new shirts and go, this is my size.
Yeah.
That's because it just doesn't look real, but.
And it's because the brain hasn't changed. And I did the same thing. I have a pair of my biggest pants and I always keep them in my drawer. I don't try them on anymore, but I look at them and go, oh my gosh, I can't believe that I fit those ones.
I think measurements as well is probably the one thing I didn't do that I wish I would have done, because really the only thing I have measurement wise to do is my neck, because that was when they did the sleep study, they measured my neck and I was at a 24 and now I'm at like a 17. But I know pant wise when I started I was in a size 58 pant and I'm in a 44 now. And I'm out of big and tall stores into regular stores now and can just shop like, you know, everybody else. And I, you know, keeping the one big outfit was hilarious because my wife made me put it on the other day and we did pictures and it was funny. But I just, because I look back at it as just, I don't even remember. Like the only thing I do remember very vividly was not being able to tuck my shirt in when I went to we had a, like a, we have a corporate lunch yearly that we used to do for every year at Valentine's Day when it was profit share time. So I had, living in Florida, I have one pair of pants and I used to call it my profit sharing pants because that was the only time I would wear pants to work. Otherwise I would wear shorts. So I remember the last time we had it, I'm in the bathroom and I'm in my, my pants and I'm trying to tuck my dress shirt in and I couldn't do it. I literally couldn't get my arm around the front of me to put my shirt in, but my pants really didn't fit well enough for me to, to put them on over my shirt. So I sat there. I almost canceled going to the lunch because I had sat there trying to get dressed, and it took me about 15 minutes to just for the shirt part, just to try to get my, I spent 15 minutes trying to get my shirt tucked in. And like almost felt my shoulder about to separate, trying to move it in a way it wasn't supposed to articulate. So that to me really was eye-opening to now realize that I not only can, because I remember I got really apprehensive because I tried like 2 weeks ago. And I was like, I told my wife, I was like, I can't tuck my shirt in. And she was like, what do you mean? And I was like, I can't get my arms, my, like, it doesn't work. And she goes, try it. And I was like, boop, boop, done. And she was like, right, okay. She goes, are you done? And I'm like, well, yeah. I was like, but you had to think about it. The last time I tried, and that's probably the closest to a panic attack I've ever been. Because when she was like, you know, tuck your shirt in, I was like, I can't. Like I almost vapor locked because I'm like, I went right back to that place I was, you know, 2 years ago, just losing it. I was just like, that's not an option for me. I can't do that. And she was just like, yeah, you can. But that kind of snapped me back to it real quick about how fast our minds revert back to, you know, all those old, you know, issues that we had at our highest weight.
So that is such a great example of what this looks like. It doesn't rise to the level of disorder because you went to the dinner or to the lunch, but it's that, and once it happens, then it's imprinted in our minds, it's embedded there, and we go back to when we try that thing again, it happens again. So here's a couple of things to do that will help you kind of break out of that pattern. First of all, do take measurements, do take pictures, do talk to yourself a lot. Be aware of what your relationship is to your body. And also be aware of what your body's done for you. It's been your faithful friend. I didn't like my body for the longest time. And one day I realized, wow, I have really abused this body. I've given it extra 200 pounds plus. And my knees and my hips and my back and my, you know, every part of me hurts, but wow, it's just trying to hold me up. And so I changed the way I felt about it, my relationship to my body. And I still say I have a sturdy body. And when I say that, my body goes, yeah, you noticed. And I feel stronger and I feel better. And so working toward accepting, letting your mind accept your body and letting your body and your mind talk to each other is really a key. And for most of us, it is hard to look in the mirror, or it is hard to look at pictures of us even now. And the more you do it, the more you'll desensitize yourself. And the more you do it, the less dysmorphia you'll have, the more accurate your measure of your body will be, and the better the relationship will be.
And it really sounds like the key to this, and really the key to lasting success after bariatric surgery, is that you have to do these things consistently, right? There's not one experience. There's not one tool. There isn't one thing that we can do one time and have it fix everything, right? It's really realizing that all of these things are going on simultaneously, and that we need to use different tools in different scenarios to overcome what we're experiencing in that moment. And I think sometimes when I think about all of the things that I have to do every day to stay on top of my recovery, it can be a little bit exhausting. But the more that I, you know, the more that I work on it, and the more frequently I reach into my tool bag and grab a tool, it's just almost becomes like, oh, nope, I got this. Oh, nope. Oh, yep. Okay. You know, and then I didn't get I didn't get to where I am today because I focused on everything all at once, right? I really was deliberate about, okay, today I feel like I'm really struggling with body dysmorphia. I'm going to focus just on that today. And I'm going to get used to using these tools. And maybe that turned into a week. And there was a point where, no, I focused on my habits for a full month, right? I focused on just vitamins. Everything else was secondary, right? But the only thing I was going to get good at was taking my vitamins consistently. And I did that for a month. But now I'm to the place where taking a vitamin is a habit. It's something that I really don't need to dedicate a lot of brain space to anymore, which means, oh, I can move on to my body issues. I can move on to my tracking. I can move on to these other things that I need to do every day in my life to find success. So I think sometimes we can get paralyzed if we really look at this whole big umbrella of things that we need to do. That's going to paralyze me. But if I just make a list of here's the biggest things that I'm struggling with, and I pick one item, all right, I could just start at the top and I say, okay, I'm going to work on this today, this week, this month. And here are the things that I'm going to do. Here's the habits that I'm going to build. And then I keep that list front and center. And as soon as I feel like, nope, I've got this under control, I've got a tool in my toolbox that's easily accessible, I'm good with that. I'm going to continue to do this. And now I'm going to add on this other item. And I just follow that pattern. I don't get overwhelmed by it all. I can chunk things out in a way that allows me to continue to make progress while still doing all of the items on my list.
Right. And it's really important. I love that approach. And that's really the way to do it. It's important while you're doing that, not to judge yourself for the things you're not doing. Yep. Look at the things you are doing, because yes. part of our community's tendency is to want to be perfect or worry about being either judging us ourselves poorly or other people judging us poorly. Yes. And so don't get judgy. That's no. super important.
Yeah, because it kicks us back into the shame cycle, right? It's an excuse that we can use to go, oh, well, you've blown it. So now you're a failure. Well, what do you do when you're a failure? We don't want to go there. We only want to focus on the things that we're doing well. Like you said, we want to take feedback that are what we perceive as failure as feedback, right? It's failure is not failure. It is information that we can use to move forward and chunk these things out in a way that's manageable for us. Because we all have lots of other things going on in our life. It's not like we can just pause life and say, well, I'm only focusing on my bariatric recovery. No. Like, you have to do that as you are being a wife and a mother and a father and a grandfather and a professional and a hobbyist and a, right? Like, all these things that are a part of your life that make you, you can't drop those. So, you know, we need to find a way to keep the things spinning that are making our lives meaningful and adding joy to it. And there is a lot of joy in figuring out this bariatric scenario, because as you figure it out, you grow in your confidence, right? And you grow in your joy and you grow in your happiness. And it just, you know, that one good thing leads to another, to another, to another. And it feels really good when you are rolling down that path and finding success along the way.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. Right.
Well, and it's good that Wendy mentioned about the, you know, judging yourself, because I think a lot of us, especially in the bariatric community, we start that when we make the decision to have surgery, because mm-hmm. what's the first question a lot of bariatric people start talking about? They're like, but people are going to think I'm taking the easy way out. Mm-hmm. And that's the biggest, from the jump, you start that judgment of yourself, and you're so busy worrying about what everybody else is doing, you or what they're going to think, you don't realize you're judging yourself mm-hmm. on the decision you've made or are thinking about making before you've even made it. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, that's a really good thing that we all should work on processing before it even happens. Cause I know, you know, as I was listening to you guys talk about it, I think back to myself, as much as I don't even really talk about or think about to myself, I'm so busy looking at other people's, you know, their success stories and how they're doing and how everything's going. And I'm like, well, I'm still in the trenches. I got 58 more pounds to go, and I've got to go. I don't stop and think about the fact that I'm actually a bariatric success story. I consider, you know, I am widely considered in the bariatric community by professionals and other people in the community alike. I am a success story by losing the 160 pounds that I've lost, let alone, you know, but I'm focused on the 58 pounds I've got left. So I'm like, yeah, I've come a long way. That's cool. But I've still got to make it way over there. And I'm not there yet. So we'll worry about that when I get there, not about what's back here. And I really think that's something that I'm going to focus a lot more on, kind of getting across to other people. It's like, you know, it's awesome to be excited for other people in their journey. I don't think anybody should ever lose that. And I'm damn sure not going to lose it myself, because that's part of what we do here, is cheer other people on and make sure they're in the right headspace to keep going. But at the same time, you got to celebrate your own successes, your own wins, because you're going to have a lot of them along the way. And if you don't stop to collect those every once in a while and think about that, you know, it's just kind of, it can be just as kind of detrimental to your success as anything else if you really don't think about that along the way.
Very true. And that's, again, our community is reluctant to do that. It's okay to acknowledge, even just to yourself, especially to yourself, that you're having success. And that helps with the dysmorphia. Ironically, that helps with the dysmorphia. It helps kind of recreate your own vision of yourself in your mind.
Wow. I always leave these conversations with just so much new learning and so much that I'm, you know, that I need to rest to process, because it's just every time it's like, oh, I never thought of it that way. Or, oh, that, you know, oh, I made this connection. It's the power of these conversations that allow these connections that have remained, you know, kind of, you know, elusive to us. But it's when we just have these honest, open conversations about these big issues that we are going through, that all of a sudden, right, these connections that have remained elusive can just snap into place and go, oh my God, that's exactly what is going on. Which is why we're so thankful, Wendy, for your time and your expertise and your knowledge, and just the fact that you are here to pour all of that into this community, because you know that it is a needed resource.
Oh, I just enjoy playing. It's so much fun. Thank you. Thank you for keep having me back.
You are going to be a frequent, well, I mean, I already consider you part of the East to West crew, but I'm so looking forward to all of the conversations that I know we're going to have in the future. And again, Jason and I are just so thankful for your time and your energy, because we are successful because of people like you. And we're just excited to put other people in a position to find success because of what you're pouring into this community.
Well, thanks for creating the community and being great mentors and caregivers and takers of the community. Yeah.
It's a role we're excited to play.
Yeah. It definitely is. April and I talk about it a lot. We talk about you a lot, and the fact that, you know, it's just what you offer to us is invaluable, as well as the community alike. And, you know, we continue to be thankful that you're always willing to give so much of yourself to not only to us, but to the community as well. And we never can thank you enough. So we're going to do it as much as we can every time we have these conversations.
Well, thank you. You guys, you don't even need to do it. Just know I'm having a great time. So thank you.
Awesome. So if you are listening or watching on no matter what platform, Wendy has some phenomenal resources in kind of the big areas that we talked about today. So all of her resources are going to be linked in the show notes. We will link them on our website so that no matter where you are taking in this information, you have some amazing professional resources that you can go to continue your exploration in these topic areas. We will also, of course, link Wendy's contact information. If you are seeking somebody to partner with, if you are seeking a professional to start talking with, obviously we can't recommend Wendy more. And she is a nationally certified distance counselor. So she now sees people all over the world. It's the one time that I can positively say, thanks, COVID. Right. It's just perfect. All of her resources are linked for you. So please do take advantage of them. And her website is also very robust. I think, Wendy, do you host your own podcast now too? Or
I do with my sister. I have a podcast about making choices. It's great. It's the tagline is, you can't choose your challenges, but you can choose your response. So that's, yeah.
So there's another resource that is available to all of us in this community. So we'll make sure that we link all of that. But our website is fantastic. Lots of resources there about all, not only the topics that we talked about today, but just kind of all of the topics that we have explored before in the past. So definitely check that out. And I would love to say too, if you are listening and you are watching and you like what you're seeing, please subscribe to our podcast, subscribe to our YouTube channel, leave us a rating, leave us a written review. That just helps us grow and it helps us expand our reach within the community. So every time you share, a podcast episode or you share a YouTube channel, all you're doing is letting people know, hey, there's this resource in the community that you can access as well. So we very much appreciate all of your support. We appreciate all of your feedback. Jason and I we feel like we're constantly asking, but we want people to know that we are legitimately always seeking feedback, because our whole goal here is to provide resources to the community that you find valuable, right? We're all spending time either making this content or you are spending your time taking in this content. And if it's not valuable for you, then we've missed the mark. So we wanna make sure that we are only producing things that add value to your life and are meaningful to you. So please know that we are real humans and we love your feedback. There's lots of ways that you can reach out to us.
Definitely. And much like April said, we just appreciate everybody for all the love and support that you guys have shown us, all the shares that we've already gotten. We've got many, many reviews. We love hearing the fact that we're connecting with people. We just want to keep doing that. So, you guys are helping us grow, letting us know that what we're doing is meaningful. And that's so important to April and I. We took this journey on, simply because we wanted to fill a hole that she and I both found, pre and post op. So we just we want to continue to be a positive resource for the community as a whole, and that's we love our little corner of the internet that we've carved out, and we hope you do too. And the more you can continue to share and like and spread the word, then the better off we'll be able to continue to bring you all the information we do. So just remember that in the grand scheme of things, you've got this, we've got you, and we'll see you next time.
Awesome. Thank you so much, guys.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.